good does that and things go.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mudgill.
Senators, visitors, thank you for coming to Oakland University Senate February 16th, 2012 meeting. And we start with informational item. There are a few of them, and I ask that all presenters be brief to the point so that we can take care of the Senate agenda. The first item is an appeal procedure for program accommodation by Dr. Aubrey and Ms. Schmidt. Susan?
Yes, Nancy Schmidt is going to address this. Nancy?
Good afternoon, and I promise brevity. Basically, what I'm here today to do is to present an appeal procedure for situations in which DSS students may be requesting programmatic changes as an accommodation. This is not a policy change of any kind. It is simply a process in which to handle any of these requests. The history is simply that there are occasions where students with disabilities will request either a course adjustment or a programmatic change in their course of study. In most cases, when it is a course-related adjustment, that is typically handled between the student, the DSS office, and the faculty member, and in 99% of the cases, that's handled very easily. However, there are cases where programmatic adjustments in the process, and that makes it a little bit more complicated. The law requires that prior to refusing any requested academic adjustment on the basis that it would lower or waive essential requirements of an academic program, the institution should convene a committee comprised of persons knowledgeable about the student's disability, including the DSS staff, and about the program in which the faculty and department heads would be the folks to engage in a careful and thoughtful deliberation of the program and the course requirements at issue, whether such requirements are essential, the feasibility, the cost, and the effect of the program, and any available alternatives. In addition, the recent communication with the OCR, the Office of Civil Rights, they have indicated that that an appropriate process needs these three elements. The decision is made by a group of trained, knowledgeable, and experienced professionals in the area. The decision makers consider a series of alternatives or essential requirements, and that the decision be careful, thoughtful, and rational review of the academic program and its requirements. I think we've done these things all along, but simply putting this in a process or a procedure that people can refer to, both students and faculty, would be helpful to us. So I've spent some time consulting with individuals in the provost's office, specifically Susan Aubrey and Michelle Piskulich, and we felt the best way to conceptualize this was to use current structures that we already have in place. There's no need to recreate the wheel. So the process we're presenting is that of using the Committee on Instruction with each of the professional schools in the college to render these decisions. Were there ever an appeal to the COI, we would then consider using UKUI at the undergraduate level or the graduate council at the graduate level to look at these appeals. There is I believe in your packet or a handout that you received, this blue flow chart that really kind of outlines what I've just described. Comments? Questions?
Nancy, is this information available for someone to see on a website or some other source?
Yes, we will.
You just shared?
We will get it on the website.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any comments, suggestion for this item? I think you were very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
The second update is, as many of you know, is relates to Macomb. We have a very strong presence in Macomb County at multiple places, and I'm very pleased to welcome Dr. Betty Youngblood to make the presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to provide a brief update regarding OU Macomb. I know some of you know a lot about our operations, and some of you are perhaps newer to those operations. So just a bit of background first. Our structure At OU-Macomb includes three instructional sites, the Macomb University Center, located behind Macomb Community College in Garfield, the Macomb Intermediate School District, also off of Garfield, and the Anton Frankel Center in Mount Clemens. We now offer at these facilities combined a total of about a dozen undergraduate programs and about a dozen graduate programs. Our newest program is housed at the Anton Frankel Center, recently announced about a couple weeks ago, the Bachelor of Social Work, and we're very pleased and very proud to have that program there. Oakland University has offered classes in Macomb County for more than 20 years, so this is not a new undertaking. We offer about 150 classes each semester, and close to 2,000 students attend classes in Macomb in any given year. Services to the area are also provided by the Pauli Lean Institute, now housed at the OU Incubator, and the Macomb OU Incubator itself, located on 18 Mile Road. What is the vision for OU-Macomb? The vision for OU-Macomb, very simply, is to be widely recognized as Macomb County's preferred university for baccalaureate and graduate programs. We seek to accomplish this vision by providing Macomb residents with easy and convenient access to high-quality educational programs and services, and by facilitating relationships with community and business leaders. You might wonder why the emphasis upon Macomb County. Approximately one-third of OU's enrollment, and I mean on this campus, approximately one-third of OU's enrollment comes from Macomb County. About 26% of the residents in Macomb County hold an associate's, a bachelor's, or an advanced degree. Here in Oakland County, that percentage is about doubled, 50% or a little bit more. Many high schools in Macomb County have only small numbers of students going on to college. Obviously, that varies from high school to high school, but particularly the high schools along the Gratiot Corridor and some of the others as well have very small percentages going on. There simply is not a significant college-going culture at many of our high schools. More than 220,000 Macomb residents have some college but no degree. You put all of these things together, and it is clear that there is significant unmet need for quality higher education in Macomb County. In the last several years, and particularly in the last few years, competition among institutions of higher learning has increased greatly in Macomb County. Now, why is all of this so important to Oakland University? Bottom line, the provost said to be brief, so we skip all those other lines. Bottom line, if an institution other than Oakland University emerges as the preferred higher education provider in the county, Oakland University will lose market share and it will experience a dramatic enrollment and economic or budgetary consequence, not just in Macomb County, but here at OU as well. Just as a quick example, if, and there's no particular reason for this assumption, but just to give you an idea, I mentioned a third of the students here at OU are from Macomb County. If half of these students from Macomb County did not come to Oakland University because some other provider had become very popular and very well known in Macomb County, we would be talking about over 3,000 students with an associated loss in tuition revenue of $30 million. Oakland University Macomb, therefore, is a vital enhancement to this particular campus. The growth and success of what this university does in Macomb County contributes very significantly to the growth and success of the university. What are our goals in Macomb? What are we trying to accomplish? And I'll just quickly mention several things that we're working on to give you an idea of the breadth of activities. First of all, we work to promote various enrollment options. Now, I know some of you, when you hear about OU-Macomb, you know, if I talk to people on campus and ask them, you know, what their experience has been, some people think it means M2O, the Macomb to Oakland initiative. Some people think it means classes at the MUC. You know, people have different views. In fact, it means all of these things and many more things. When we look at enrollment options, we serve as a gateway in Macomb County to the main campus here at OU, some students want and need to be on this campus, and we do everything we can to facilitate getting them here. We also facilitate degree completion for a number of different populations, traditional age students, non-traditional age, and transfer populations. We, of course, also support the CC2O partnerships with community colleges. Obviously, in Macomb, our efforts are focused on the M2O program. And, of course, we deliver full undergraduate and graduate programs in Macomb County. In addition to all of this emphasis upon enrollment options, we are working very hard to expand academic offerings through full degree programs, through alternative degree models. We have a lot of interest in hybrid courses and programs, for example. We seek to identify more opportunities in service learning and in internships. We are working very hard to generate greater awareness of OU Macomb, both internally and externally. And when I say internally, I mean here at Oakland University, and externally, of course, I mean everyone else. We're working very hard to support the recruitment and the retention of Macomb students, whether that recruitment and retention occurs here at OU or whether it occurs at OU Macomb. We, of course, are also working very hard to strengthen relationships with community colleges, to develop new articulation and transfer options, and, of course, to strengthen the M2O program. We are also spending a lot of our time engaging in local and economic development initiatives, trying to link various initiatives to the intellectual research and public service capacities of Oakland University. And as I mentioned earlier, we are engaged in a number of efforts to nurture a college-going culture in Macomb County. And as we do that, of course, we serve the people of Macomb County effectively. It's a long-term project, nurturing a college-going culture, of course, not going to be completed anytime soon, but we're working very hard on that. It serves the people in Macomb County, and it also serves Oakland University. It's a real pleasure to be here with you today. I know you represent many programs. If I haven't already spoken with your program, your department, your area on the campus, I would be delighted to. So please do be in contact and let me know if you see any ways in which we might partner in some new and exciting ways.
Dr. Youngblood, thank you. Any questions, comments, or suggestions? I'd like to share with you that it goes without saying, and I cannot add what Dr. Youngblood already shared with you, that Oakland has a stake in this area, and it affects everything we do here if we don't hold on to Macomb, because if there is a sudden drop in enrollment because another university comes in Macomb, it will have effect on everyone here in this room, because if we lose $30 million or so, some programs will have to suffer, and we wouldn't be able to support what we are able to now. So I think her advice is well taken, and the more we participate and strengthen her hands and our faculty and staff who are engaged, and most recently we added a program, BSW, and I applaud and appreciate that effort in the interest, larger interest of academics and Oakland University. Dr. Youngblood, thank you very much.
Thank you. And as we say, go Oakland, go Macomb.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, we have on our campus ability to incubate future Bill Gates and Henry Fords. And that happened because we have an entrepreneurial program in the School of Engineering and Computer Science. And that is led by Mike Lacha. Every year on fall and winter semesters, he takes on under his wings two groups of students, fall and winter, multiple groups actually, and Senior Design Project is a flagship of our student entrepreneurship. Mike, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Moodgill. I've been invited to be brief. Senior engineering students need at least one comprehensive, intensive, and realistic design experience before they can be thought of as ready to enter the workplace. While we in the school have been offering design experiences for a long time, the delivery methods and that were used were inefficient and resulted in essentially unrealistic projects. when we took on the challenge of revamping the design experience, we turned to our advisory board members and leaned on them heavily for advice and guidance. The structure of the design experience is actually fairly simple. What we do is we take all of the engineering seniors and put them all in one room. They all take part in the final semester. They are assigned to multidisciplinary design groups supervised by a multidisciplinary team of instructors. The groups are assigned by engineering field, extracurricular activities, interest and skills, and access to resources, mainly off-campus resources. The projects, the way we assign projects is actually a little strange. They are chosen based on their multidisciplinary nature, and by design, they are not examined in depth by the instructors before the course begins. The very best projects, in fact, that we've run have been the ones that appear to be impossible to accomplish during a single semester. Questions that arise by students during the course of this experience are almost never answered by instructors. What we try to do is get the students to rely on the knowledge that we've taught them up to that point in the process, their own team members, and their own research skills. This part of this experience is probably the most difficult for instructors to deal with. We have to allow students to go in the wrong direction and perhaps fail. It's also very difficult for some instructors to give up the whole idea of being the expert in the room. Every semester ends in a public exposition or competition. This has proven to be an amazingly effective motivational tool, even though it counts for a very tiny portion of the final grade. And since winter 2004, we have not repeated a single project. We have, in fact, competed with autonomous robots that follow lines of tape on the floor. We've climbed the SEB tower, which resulted in a serious conversation with OUPD. We've thrown little balls into buckets with autonomous devices. We've climbed ropes and dropped darts onto dart boards. For several semesters, we teamed with some faculty in SBA to develop products that would be competitive in the global marketplace. Yes, that's beer. Don't even ask. These exhibitions have been very popular with alumni. We've teamed with faculty in nursing to develop a couple of projects. This one, if I had to pick from the last 17 semesters a single project, this would be among my favorite. What looks like is a doll there is actually an infant simulator. It turns out that it's very difficult to take vital signs on an infant. We're talking somebody 5 minutes old. And some nursing instructors came to us and asked us if we could build a simulator. That particular simulator right there has a pulse in 5 spots. She breathes, her chest goes up and down, air comes out of her nose and her mouth, her lips turn blue, pink, and white. All of that is controlled wirelessly from a computer, so the instructor can actually set up scenarios by which that infant can go into distress as it's being simulated. The closest thing that's on the market to that doesn't do nearly what she does and costs $250,000. That project costs $500 to put together. We have run our version of the famous Trinity College firefighting robot competition, where robots have to go into a model house and find and blow out a candle. That led to another serious discussion with OUPD and the fire marshal. So the next semester we changed it, and the robots had to find and retrieve a ball that was thrown into the house. This turned out to be significantly more difficult than dealing with the fire. We had a conversation with some people from the Department of Defense who told us that there was no defense contractor who could commit to building a robot that could autonomously climb a flight of stairs in less than 5 years. It's a little bit hard to see, but that robot is actually carrying a glass of water up the stairs. And what we were doing in this semester is we were looking for the smooth and stable motion that would be necessary if we were to implement this, for instance, on a wheelchair. Right? It's significantly easier to go up a flight of stairs than it is to come down. And I think every parent can appreciate the reaction of the guy on the right as his design headed for that first set of stairs. There were other ideas how to make this motion a little bit more smooth going up and down stairs. This one actually climbed and went down very easily. Had a bit of trouble at the top of that flight of stairs. But what we're looking for is different kinds of ideas. Once we knew that we could actually climb stairs in 14 weeks, then we turned it into a speed race. This robot is actually moving around this course autonomously. It's reading data from the line, climbing the stairs. This one is going to actually need a little bit of help once it makes this turn. Comes down to the bottom and reacquires this line and then goes on its way. This is another really different kind of a concept. This robot clearly is having some issues following the line, mainly because it's too short. But when you'll be able to tell immediately where this group spent its time. And of course, coming downstairs is just a matter of controlling the fall. In the 17 semesters since winter 2004, more than 1,000 students have participated in this experience. We have described in a series of journal and conference publications what we've learned. When we go to conferences, what we are told most often is that this can't possibly work. An experience as comprehensive and intensive as this really can't help but point out shortcomings in the program that leads to it. And once we started in on this, it became apparently clear through our assessment process that we needed to make some fairly painful adjustments to the program that led to this. We made those. We have significantly stronger programs across all of the engineering disciplines. Provost Moodgill has been instrumental in the success of this effort, and he has been funding the cost of prototypes since fall 2006 through the Undergraduate Research Scholar Program. We'd like to acknowledge the encouragement of former Dean Frick and Dean Chamra, their encouragement and the occasional need for their patience. We'd like to acknowledge the assistance of the faculty in both SBA and the School of Nursing for their help in this. And always the professional in understanding OUPD. These are the people that over the last 17 semesters have participated in this. And I really can't end this without describing to you the project that we're pursuing this semester. We are designing, building, and testing and competing with a device to throw tennis balls into a 5-gallon bucket. So we have a device that will throw tennis balls into a bucket. Okay, knowing me, it can't possibly end there. So there's going to be a barrier between the device and the bucket, where the device will not be able to see where the bucket's located before it starts to throw the balls. Targeting that will be, there'll be an image from a single webcam on the other side. That image will be uploaded to a website. So a computer will have to find that image, do image processing on it, send signals to the device, which will then throw 3 tennis balls into the bucket. Scoring is based on the number of balls that enter or hit the bucket, divided by the time required to throw the 3 balls, divided by the cost of the device. That now sets up all kinds of interesting questions and design scenarios. This will take place outside, somewhere on campus, on the morning of April 18th. Whatever weather conditions exist on the morning of April 18th. Which any of you who have ever been here for an April know it could be most anything. Are there any questions? No, nobody has more fun than we do.
I think it needs an applause. Dr. Lacha, thank you. Thank you for your leadership. Senators, I have a sad news to share with you. I do this because we generally have not used this platform for such information or announcements, but this is something special, unique, and I think it calls for that I share that with you. On February 14th, we lost one of our own and the very, very first faculty ever hired at Oakland University, Professor Dick Burke. And some of you know his contribution, and some of you know him personally, and I'd like to share a few things with you, those of you who are not, who have not been exposed to his eminence and his contributions. Number one, he was the first faculty ever hired by Oakland University, the worst. I think that record cannot be met or beaten. He was a faculty for 47 years. I thought it was longer than that, but 47 years. And then he was so generous that he donated his personal $500,000 to set up an endowment for lectures, work lectures in philosophy. I think that's another great contribution by him to bring the very best thinkers in America that are available to come and lecture to our campus on issues of importance and thinking and thought process and controversial issues, which is what academy should be doing. In addition, I'm told that Dr. Burke was also the first professor or leader on our campus to propose interdisciplinary programs before it was fashionable. He also, I'm told, was the pioneer in starting the religious studies program at Oakland University, which has taken different shapes and contours now, but he was the premier, first person to do that. I just thought I'll pay tribute to him on your behalf, on the Senate, that Oakland is a richer place because of Dick Burke. And we're very proud that he touched the lives of students, faculty, and staff, both by his intellect and also by his generosity of giving so much to Oakland. Maybe start the roll call, please.
Oh, certainly. Okay. Henry Agabedo. Susan Aubrey. Wally Anderson. Mary Tracy B. Keith Bourbon. Chesania Butler. Louis Chamra. Chris Clayson, here. Natalie Cole, Brian Connery, here. Chris Kondik, here. Lisa Dalton, here. Mark Doman, here. Dave Dulio, here. Jason Dunn, Arik DeVere, Andrea Ice,
here.
Todd Estes, Robert Fulberg, here. Peter Frick, Liang Fu, Louis Gallion, Wesley Gamble, Greg Guyberson, Frank Giblin, Janet Grates, Kevin Grimm, here. Jerry Grossman,
here.
Lila Gesus, Kelly, oh, excuse me, she's not here, Kenneth Hightower, Melissa Hogue, Fred Hoffman, Tamara Joshi, Michael Lacha,
here.
Thomas Lauer,
here.
Todd Liebert,
here.
Thomas Lamarb,
here.
Adrienne Lim,
here.
Jay Meehan,
here.
Karen Miller, Anisha Mitchell, Marilyn Morgian, Don Pickard, Michael Pullis, Joe Rieger.
Was here.
Cheryl Riley Dusset.
Here.
Brad Roth.
Here.
Joel Russell. Laura Shartman.
Here.
Carrie Schuling.
Here.
Ishwar Sethi. Steve Shablin.
Here.
William Solomonson. Anna Spagnolo,
here.
Myron Steno, Ronald Sudol, Mohan Tanaru, Amber Tashiro. Chris Thompson.
Here.
Jennifer Thor.
Here.
Scott Teagues.
Here.
Karen Wells. Lynn Williams. Susan Wood.
Here.
Dao Zhang.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Ika, thank you. We move on to item number C, which is an election of Senate Steering Committee member. For those of you who are new to the Senate, with your permission, I'd like to read the responsibilities. At this meeting of the Senate, the Senate needs to fill one semester vacancy on the Senate Steering Committee. The only limitation on electability of senators to this committee is that no more than two may be elected from any one organized faculty. The steering committee normally meets twice a month, Tuesday afternoons from 1 to 3. I say that for you to consider whether you can meet those deadlines or times. To set the Senate agenda, refer business to Senate committees, and receive reports from those bodies, and advise the Senate on governance issues. It may also meet occasionally during the summer. If you wish to nominate someone, please establish on the floor now. It was to be in advance. And I call the election committee to make the proceedings. Dr. Williams.
Provost Moodgill and fellow senators, I have a suggestion for you to consider. We did a replacement election very recently. We had two nominations, and there ended up being one vote difference between the two. And I put forth for your consideration that we simply have the second place person step into the slot and not go through the election again. Unless there is someone that would like to run, we can have an election, but if there's no one dying to do it, that would be a quick result.
Go ahead. Anyone?
I just wondered who that person was.
Chris Condit.
Any
would
comment?
Would you be willing?
Yeah. Well, Chris, why don't you make a motion?
I move that Chris Condit be elected to the steering committee.
Second?
Second.
All right. Steve Chablin. The name Chris Condit has been proposed and seconded by a senator, and we are open to any suggestion, comments, or someone who wished his or her name should have been there. I'm just kidding. hearing none, I think we're ready to vote. All those who are in support of this nomination, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations. Welcome. Dr. Williams, thank you. We move on to approval of the minutes of January 12, 2012 meeting of the Senate. I hope you had a chance. Any proposal to accept the minutes?
I'll move.
Any second?
Second.
Seconded. Yes. You have any amendments to the minutes? Please share the mic if you don't mind.
Who moved? Andrea moved to approve.
Thibert Counseling. There was just one quote on here that I had said last time, or just one question. I just wanted it to be on for the record.
Sure.
And it was something to the effect of I'd asked whether the new psychology master's program would include a clinical track, and the answer that I heard in here was no. And I just wanted that on the record.
Okay. Would you just say that one more time, please?
I would. Did their new master's program include a clinical track?
Okay. A clinical track?
Yes.
Okay, I'll make that correction.
Thank you.
All right.
Any other amendments, suggestion, corrections? Now, please,
you need to vote for that.
We'd like a vote on this amendment.
Just vote?
Yeah. Please indicate your approval that we accept this amendment to the minutes of January 12, 2012 meeting. All those in favor of accepting this amendment, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So accepted. Thank you. Now we're back to the minutes, and if you have any further changes, adjustments, please take the mic and share. Hearing none, those who are in support of the January 12, 2012 minutes with the amendment that we just passed, please indicate your approval by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? So accepted. Thank you. Item number E is unfinished business, and there is a motion from Yuqui to approve a change in the residency requirement in the Oakland University catalog. Will one of the senator, standing committee member, read this motion, please? Mike, would you like to do it?
Move that the proposed revision to the residency requirement be adopted.
Any second?
Second.
Thank you. This is a second reading. It's amendable, debatable, and is eligible for a vote. Let me make a comment. Those of you who are considering any comment, this change is necessary to be part of Service Member Opportunity College's Service Member Opportunity College, yuqui.com/doc. Susan, you have anything to add to this? Steve, would you kindly?
Yeah. Just for those senators who were not at the last meeting, what the additional language, Oakland University has an academic residency policy that requires that the minimum of 32 credits be earned at Oakland University. With the last 8 hours earned here at Oakland University and the last four if in the BIS program. And what the additional language would read, that Oakland University limits academic residency to no more than 25% of the degree requirements for all undergraduate degrees for active duty service members. Academic residency can be completed at any time while active duty service members are enrolled. Reservists and National Guardsmen on active duty are covered in the same manner. So that additional language is the proposed revision that's the second reading and eligible for vote.
So we are ready to vote because the second reading. All those in favor of this motion, please indicate your approval by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? So approved. Thank you. We move on to item number two, which is a motion to change Oakland University role and mission statement to recognize the importance of diversity and inclusion. This is a second reading, all earlier proposed and seconded. So the motion is move that the Senate recommend to the President and Board of Trustees a change, the addition of the words, end quote, in a diverse and inclusive environment, end of quote, to the role and mission statement of Oakland University. This is second reading, amendable, debatable, and is eligible for vote. Any comments, any suggestion at this time before we vote? In that case, we're ready to vote. Please indicate your approval in support of the motion by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? None. It's approved. Congratulations. Item number F is new business. It's a motion from steering committee to recommend approval of Bachelor of Arts in Graphic Design in the Department of Art and Art History. Andrea, would you make the motion?
Move that the Senate recommend to the President and Board of Trustees approval of the Bachelor of Arts in Graphic Design.
Thank you. Any second? Second by Tamara Jashi. This is a new program and is open for discussion, comments, suggestions, and any presentation, please. This is art and art history.
I do have a short presentation about the Bachelor of Arts in Graphic Design. The curriculum, we designed it based on recommended models from the American Institute of Graphic Arts, AIGA, which is the professional organization for graphic designers, and the National Association of Schools of Art and Design, NASHAD, which is the accrediting body for programs in art and design. The required coursework is grounded in design studio practice, as well as studying theory and history of design, practice of fine art, and the study of art history. So it is interdisciplinary within our department, which has these three aspects to it. Image analysis and historical awareness are emphasized in integration with studio practice. And the curriculum is structured to encourage students to engage in individualized investigations of medium context and technology. And it's very appropriate after Mike's presentation. Actually, this is about active learning. It's about student-centered learning, hands-on kinds of ways to deal with developing very specific graphic design projects that are oriented to what a graphic designer would do in the real world. We are working to develop certain core qualities that successful graphic designers have: critical thinking, analytical reasoning and creative problem-solving skills, written, visual, oral communication skills, integrity, and ethics. And these are integrated into all of the courses. This was in the proposal, but hopefully you did have a chance to look over it. We have a foundation level of mostly studio art classes and a foundations graphic design class, 12 credits of art history, and then the depth of study in the design courses, including 8 electives in design. And so I won't keep this up here very long, but we also have the BA in graphic design with K-12 art education certification, which has slightly different requirements because of state requirements for certification for art education. Oops, went a little fast there. Sorry. Just to give an overview, these are our enrollment projections for incremental enrollment, so new students, and a budget overview based on the budget we have in the proposal, with starting with 20 students in the first year, going up to 40, 60, and then 80. As you can see, we our net goes up as well. And this is an example where enrollment is controlled through entrance portfolio review. When this program went through CUE, they asked us to create a different budget that showed what would happen if this was an extremely popular program, which we do think it has the possibilities to be very popular. And so we did do another budget with higher enrollment, and that budget is in the UCUE report. But if anybody has questions about it, I do have a copy of it, but I didn't put it up here. And just one note, I will, because this is important for something else in the presentation, is that the expenses do include 2 tenure track hires. In terms of career opportunities, the Bureau of Labor Statistics does predict increases nationally in the 10 years between 2010 and 2020 of 13.4% in graphic design jobs and art director jobs, which are often jobs that graphic designers fill, of 24.3%. Michigan State charts do have a lower increase, but they also do show positive job opportunities in graphic design. There are certainly a wide range of careers open to graphic designers, and everything that you look around at has been designed by someone, and so it's everywhere. Generally, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, their graphic design report notes that a bachelor's degree in graphic design is usually required for most entry-level and advanced design positions. And this is important that they also note that better career opportunities for students with a bachelor's degree as opposed to an associate's degree or certificates in graphic design. Certainly the community colleges do offer associate's degree in graphic design, and there are a lot of places who have certificates. But according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, those would only qualify for them to be assistants to graphic designers or for positions which only require technical skill. So it's very different than the approach of our program. And the same report also talks about the importance of a liberal arts education, and we do consider what we have developed in this program definitely a liberal arts education. I thought I would deal with this right up front, and if there are any questions, you know, certainly I will be happy to answer them. But as you might have noticed, if you had a chance to read the reports from the Senate committees, we had positive reports from assessment, UQE, and SBRC, but Senate planning had issues with our program. And so I'm going to make some points about that. In their report, they said currently there are no tenure line faculty teaching in the graphic design minor, and the proposal identifies only a projection to hire two, quote, full-time faculty members. We have clarified the proposal to note that it's full-time tenure track faculty members. The department's intention always was that these full-time hires would be tenure track. We accidentally left out the words tenure track in our original proposal. It's been fixed. It was not the intention that that be left out. They went on to say that they felt it was inappropriate to staff a degree program without the stability proffered by tenure. They believed that operating a degree program without tenure is an invitation to instability that will have serious repercussions for the success of the program and the reputation of the university. The Department of Art and Art History actually has three full-time faculty members with professional experience in graphic design who can teach in this major. Two of these faculty are tenured associate professors. One is an adjunct assistant professor who has taught at OU since 2004 and has just been appointed to her second three-year adjunct contract in the department. A tenured associate professor will be teaching in the program from the first year. That's me. Associate Professor Andrea Ice will be teaching the motion graphics course, which is required for the major. So there will be a tenured person teaching in the major from the very first year. The committee would like to note that the sole issue that led to their negative assessment was the lack of tenure track leadership, and that should this issue be rectified, we would unanimously recommend the proposal. The proposal actually does include two tenure track hires for the major within the first 5 years, and at UQE's request, as I mentioned, we did do an additional budget showing higher projected enrollment, and this budget includes four tenure track hires in the first 5 years. We feel that it's not unusual, problematic, or unprecedented at OU for directors of programs to be non-tenure track. The Studio Art major operated quite successfully for years with a director who was not tenure track, with two directors, actually, who were not tenure track. The Journalism major, another highly successful program, has a director who is not tenure track. It is true that we have a proposed director for the graphic design program who is not tenure track, but she is a long-term faculty member in the department. I mentioned previously an adjunct assistant professor with a recently renewed three-year contract. She also has 20 years of professional graphic design experience. And the Department of Art and Art History respectfully disagrees that there is a lack of tenure track leadership. All programs within the department, currently art history and studio art, are the overarching responsibility of the tenured chair. The chair provides, along with the other tenured and tenure-track members of the department, appropriate leadership and governance for majors within the department. The chair and tenure-track faculty would serve in the same capacity for graphic design. In the same report as the above quote, the SPRC did note that a strength of the proposal was that the Department of Art and Art History has demonstrated the ability and has the necessary experience to successfully launch a new program of the kind described in the proposal. We feel that we do as well. So, questions?
Andrea, thank you. Any comments, suggestions?
I'm sorry. I'm just making my way through the materials. I want to ask if you could just clarify one thing for me.
Yeah.
Is it Ms. Fossone? Is that?
Yes.
And her position is there's a request to change that from an adjunct assistant to a special lecturer? Did I read
special
that?
Special instructor.
Ah, that makes sense. I think it said special lecturer in the first draft of the planning committee.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Then I no longer have a question.
Okay.
Andrea, I have a question. In your economic data, there's a lot of positive balance every year and significant. The new students that you expect to take this program, is this a shift from existing programs or they're brand new students?
The ones in the budget are brand new students. Those are incremental students.
And how did we know that, by survey, or how did you know they're new students?
Well, we don't have them yet, so we don't
know. No, but what is the...
Well, we
did
do a survey.
What is the reasoning that they will be new students?
I'm sorry.
I mean, do you have a survey done as to who will be interested in this course or so forth?
We did do a survey that's in the proposal of our own students. We also have had numerous inquiries from particularly community college students, and from what we've been told, admissions gets numerous requests every year for...
That's helpful. That's what I was looking for. Thank you. Any other comments, suggestions? Well, we thank you. This was the first reading. Thank you.
Thank you.
While we move on to good and welfare, anyone wants to make any comment, suggestions? Any motion to adjourn? Dr. Piskulich.
I just thought the Senate might like to know that one of its members has been named as the Gagosian Award winner this year. Layla Gassous, who couldn't be here today, will be honored at the banquet, luncheon banquet, on March 21st here in this room.
Congratulations to Layla. Thank you. Do we have an adjournment motion? Yes?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Second from Henry. Anyone interested in adjournment, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
I'll go check that name for you. Okay.